Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
How's it going? And welcome to episode 145 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. You can follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me at 80Grade. That's all spelled out. And Kevin Hastings is at Hastings Kevin on the Twitter. And we are here once again, Kevin. Week by week goes by. We're getting closer and closer. Finally, new year. So now we, you know, I feel like this is finally where you can start confidently saying last year, meaning last season. We always hear this on when talking to people and when I, and just on podcasts, whatever. It's like, oh, it's November, and you're like, last year. I mean, this last season, and you never quite know what anybody's talking about. Now we can say that confidently, and we can say that we're drafting for this year. It's just nice to be able to get that nuance out of the way. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Adam. Hope you're doing well. Enjoying your new year so far. Here we are. I think it's the fifth day of the new year as we're recording. Things are going great. Eno Saris was on island visiting family.
Yes,
so hung out at a brewery, of course. We hung out for a little while. Listener of the show, Matthew King, joined us as well. Talked baseball over a couple of beers and got a little further behind on yard work than I already was from the holidays, but never passing up an opportunity to talk baseball.
Just the fact that you're talking about doing yard work in early January, though, is just, come on, Kevin.
Yeah, I know I'm not going to get any sympathy, but living in a tropical climate, taking a week and a half, 2 weeks off yard work, I have a lot of catching up to do.
I was like, hey, I'm not doing yard work either. But, there's different reasons for that. We're supposed to get snow over the weekend. Finally, we haven't gotten, middle of Indiana, middle of the country. I haven't seen snow all season. We had a dusting on Halloween. We had a dusting like the week before Christmas or week after. But nothing that stuck for more than like a minute. Obviously nothing that you're too concerned about out there, but it would be nice that with the cold comes, it would be nice if it brought snow with it. As a father of two kids who would like to go outside and have a reason to go outside, it would be nice to do something in the cold.
Dead grass. Oh my God. Yeah.
We don't even see the grass. We're the family, we're the house that doesn't rake all of our leaves. We just kind of mulch them. And so our yard already looked terrible just because it's just mulch leaves and all over the yard. We're that house. All right. Well, we got a lot to talk about. A lot of small things have happened in the last week, including a couple of things that just came across the desk today. So we're going to get to all of that. Nothing huge. We will kick it off with probably the biggest thing that we just missed last weekend as it came across the desk right after we were done recording. Two big things that happened right after that. So we'll talk first and foremost, the big signing from the Padres, where they signed another reliever from overseas, this time signing Korean reliever Woo Suk Go to a 2-year deal. They have a mutual option for 2026 as well. I believe there's a buyout involved in that. So if the Padres decide to go their separate ways, they still going to pay him like $2 million or something like that. But now we have another guy who everybody thinks is going to be the closer for the Padres. Is just even more clear that, not that it needed to be said again, but we're not going to see Hader come back in that role, or it probably at all for the Padres. But what's your take on Woo Suk Go and his role, or his expected role with the Padres in 2024.
I'm interested. Anytime Tim McCloud is excited about a signing, as it seems he is about this one, when guys come from the NPB and KBO, yeah, I get a little excited. And so I had him at the top of my queue. I was ready to draft him in our recent 15-team listener league that finished up this week, and somebody happened to grab him one pick before me.
I couldn't believe it. Yes, spoiler, that was me. That was me. but the news broke, and there was still like, I don't know, like 7 or 8
He was
picks.
There for a while.
Yeah, he was still on the board. So he was already going in, like, in DCs. He was already going in, like, the top 35 rounds, like, going right after that pick 30. So he was going to go. I mean, we were in round, what, 28? What was that, 28th round pick or 29th maybe? Where I ended up grabbing him. So I feel like he was going to end up going. That's the type of player in a fab league, especially in December or January, that you use that 28, 29, 30th round pick. You know he's going to sign, or at least you're very confident he's going to sign, and he has the closing experience in his former league, this KBO, where he's had success, that the risk is worth the reward. In that late in a fab league draft, I understand him going, why he goes post round 30 in a DC. I mean, you have that flexibility. You have 50 rounds you have to fill anyway. Might as well take a little bit less risk, or at least push the risk down, you know, kick the can down the road a little bit there. But in a fab league, those last couple picks are all about risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that, you know, the talk about, we heard the same talk about Matt Sui, when the Padres signed him, I believe that he may close games, but it seems more, it really looks to me more like that's what the Padres do have in mind for Woonsook Go. So yeah, I moved him straight to the top of my queue when that seemed like that was their intention with the signing. And I think you got a good one there for that late in a 15 team league.
Let's also remember, we talked about this last week, you know, the Padres and Dodgers play that first 2-game series, in Korea. One, so obviously he's going to get in the game. And it would be nice if he was in that high leverage situation, so you get that, you know, that first save, possibly if they can get a win from the Dodgers in those first 2 games. There's that opportunity there as well. I don't know how much I would play. And we talk about this a lot, and you remind everybody that I talk about this a lot as far as closers that have a contract rather than arbitration. I wonder if, because he only has a 2-year deal versus Matsui's 4-year deal, that he actually would be more apt to be put into the closer role to add trade value in the short term. Somebody you signed to a 4-year deal, typically you're not looking to trade him right away, but on a short term deal like that, I wonder if the Padres, depending on where they're at the end of the season or, you know, into next season, would want to, you know, dangle him out there. And if he has more closing or successful closing experience through this year, that'll obviously add to that value as well. All right. The other big news, I'm jumping around this outline, Kevin. Just want to get these things out of the way. The big news that we just missed out, and I messaged you right after we were done recording, of course, it happened at that time, was the big trade between the Boston Red Sox and Atlanta. We have Chris Sale entering the rotation for Atlanta, also signing an extension at his age to keep him in Atlanta through 2025 with a new club option for 2026. They had a club option for 2025 prior. So now that's guaranteed money in his pocket. The Red Sox also sent some cash that basically covers his contract for this year, 2024. Obviously, he's in that rotation. He's toward, if not at the top of that rotation for Atlanta. Not much to say there per se, but on the flip side, the Red Sox get presumably their second baseman of the future. The Red Sox have gone through a few of these guys as far as their quote second baseman of the future go. And there's still no guarantee that, you know, Grissom is that second baseman of the future. I'm of the opinion that maybe Trevor Story should probably move over to second base, but, you know, that's not why they signed him as well. But I would expect Grissom to be an everyday player in his new role. Does the fact that Grissom is going to a position, going to a team where there's a clear path to playing time on a still a decent offense around him in a ballpark that is very favorable, do enough for you to be genuinely interested in drafting Grissom as a starting second baseman in a 15-team league?
Well, you don't have to. And it's yet to be seen how far he rises in drafts. But as we're going to talk later in this episode about some of the later round guys, I mean, he's going 25th rounder later in 15-team leagues right now. And that's going to go up a little bit. But by then, you better have a second baseman. So we're probably looking at least middle infielder. To answer your question, no. I am buying into Nick Pollock's and many others' philosophy, and especially this season, you have to have a plan for second base going into a draft. I have drafted either Ozzie Albies or Marcus Semien in, I believe, every draft I've been in. I haven't been in a position where I could take Mookie Betts yet. Well, I have, but I took Ronald Acuna Jr.
Yeah, well, fair.
But I'm getting one of those guys. At least I have so far, and I hope to continue to do that because there's a big cliff in my mind after the first three or four guys, if you count Jose Altuve in there. So I haven't been in a spot, and I don't want to be in a spot where I would have to make that decision. So I'm going to go no as far as being my starting second baseman on my fantasy team. But middle infielder, definitely second baseman in a DC. Yep, I think he's going to get the playing time at least to start. Hopefully his defense is adequate enough that he stays in the lineup. I think he's going to hit enough, but is he going to play good enough defense?
Yeah. That's the key. He's terrible at that. That's a part of his job that he is, you know, he needs a performance improvement plan. And hopefully I don't know if the Red Sox are the team that are going to do that for him, but you know, we'll see. I mean, second base is pretty much the only place. I mean, I don't want to see him in left field. I don't want to see him playing off the monster. Now there are all these weird rumors going around that, you know, Yoshida is possibly being shopped, but not really being shopped, but they're keeping their options open. So because Teoscar Hernandez is of interest to the Red Sox. I'm interested to see what they do, of course, especially as a Red Sox fan, but in general, I don't have a ton of faith in that aspect of them moving him along, the Grissom that is, defensively. So, you know, second base is pretty much all I'm expecting to see out of him. And we need to see if he's actually going to start, you know, hitting the ball enough to kind of warrant that as well. But they have a lot of control over him. He obviously has some talent. He showed some good flashes. So we'll see how that is. I asked a question about him being a starting second baseman. Not that I expect him to be the starting second baseman for anybody, but because, as you alluded to, or you very directly said, there's big cliffs at second base. There's cliffs at every position. We all know this, but there's multiple cliffs, I feel, at second base, and it's really easy to jump off each cliff and then be like, all right, well, now I'm going to wait even longer, and then find yourself in a position where I don't have a second baseman really late. So now I've got to start kind of bulk drafting guys that have second base eligibility. Basically drafting multiple middle infielders. One of them will maybe end up being my starting second baseman by default. And I wonder if that his value would be up enough to like put him into that mix where you're drafting guys along the same lines as, you know, besides Grissom, but also looking through this, you know, Luis Urias in Seattle, now in Seattle. This we're going deep into DC. We're going past round 30 here. Whether it's Vargas in the Dodgers, if he has more of a role, Luis Garcia in Washington, Brendan Rodgers in Colorado, and then up a notch, we have Rosario with the Dodgers as well. Second base eligible, Bryce Terang in that bunch. And if you get a bunch of these, Gavin Lux still has a second base eligibility as well. If you have enough of these guys, are you willing to like draft a bunch of these guys? It doesn't sound like you are, because you've already talked about how you want to make sure you have that tent pole. And as you mentioned, you've been drafting Albies and or Semien. You drafted Albies in our 15 teamer. As we talked about earlier, we were back to back in that draft. I drafted Semien right after you because I was upset because you picked Albies because I had the same thought.
And like you're talking, the groupings here, even moving up, we're going to turn this into a second base episode here real quick. After those four guys, Betts, Albies, Semien, Altuve, the next three guys are all shortstop eligible. That's Nico Horner, Matt McClain, Haesung Kim, according to NFBC ADP. And then we have Gleyber Torres going just inside the top 100. And I'd be fine with Gleyber Torres, but I don't want to be in a spot where I have to get him, right?
Right.
And because everybody's looking at this. Everybody's got questions after that. Bryson Stott, Andrés Giménez. I understand the potential of these guys, but they all have question marks. Ketel Marte, Zach Geloff. Then we got more multi-eligible players in Estrada and Edmund. Luis Arias in a 15-team league is being drafted as a starting second baseman if everybody that's second base eligible is playing second base for their fantasy teams. So we're looking at Nolan Gorman, Jonathan India, Edward Julian probably being drafted as starting second baseman in 15-team leagues. It's rough. So now thinking of it that way, maybe Vaughn Grissom can make his way to the point where if we are confident he is going to be able to hold that position, he's a starting second baseman in fantasy baseball.
All right. Like you said, we're going to move on now so we don't turn this into a second base preview. We don't typically do our preview episodes like that. We'll do it by category. We'll start those in a couple of weeks. But let's move on regardless to some more recent news that has come around. We have a couple of trades that are either completed or basically completed. Seattle making a lot of moves. Let's just go through the onslaught of moves that they have made so far. First and foremost, they changed their rotation. They got rid of Robbie Ray, who will be on the shelf for the majority of at least the first half of the season after having Tommy John last year. He gets shipped off to San Francisco. And instead, they get Anthony DeSclafani, who will fill in some kind of role in their pitching for their pitching staff. And then they get back Mitch Haniger, which is just fun. That's just fun to see Mitch Haniger going back to Seattle. On top of that, they also acquired Luke Raley from Tampa Bay, and they send infielder Jose Caballero to Tampa Bay, which he just seems like a Tampa Bay. He seemed like he was already on Tampa Bay already. He was just one of those guys, the way, you know, what he brings to the field. And then just in general, it's just assumed he was already there. So I know I'm not going to spend any time asking you how you feel about Robbie Ray going to San Francisco, because I don't think it matters. But what role do you see Anthony DeSclafani having in Seattle after what he did or didn't do in San Francisco last year?
Unfortunately for him, I think he's the long relief guy and spot starter until we see an injury. We were talking a little bit off air about this rotation. Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, Brian Wu. I think that's the rotation. I really do. Yeah. A couple of these guys have... You know, Wu only threw 87 innings, but he threw some in the minors as well. So, but every team uses more than five starters at some point throughout the year. And I think as of right now, that probably will be DeSclafani.
Yeah, I mean, that makes the most sense of why Seattle would make this kind of a move after signing Ray to such a long-term deal, after, you know, coming off his Cy Young season in Toronto. You're not going to have him. I mean, you're simply not going to have him. You don't know what you're going to have out of him at this time, you know, halfway through the season when he does return, assuming he does return, that's not set in stone. So a lot more question marks with him. So I understand why they do that, how they can like fill that you know, that roster spot a little bit more efficiently, even with somebody like Desclafani. Luke Raley, does he fill the time slot that maybe they lost from sending Kelenic to Atlanta in that outfield in Seattle and, you know, not bringing back other players? Mitch Haniger, is he fighting for an outfield spot? Is he just going to fight with Mitch Garver for DH position? Like, these two guys seem like they don't necessarily have everyday playing time, even with Mitch Haniger's history.
I think Haniger's going to get the first shot, and when healthy, he's the right fielder. I really do. I don't see Sam Haggerty, Dylan Moore, Taylor Trammell playing in front of Mitch Haniger when he's healthy. So I think he does. Luke Raley, hopefully, I really hope so, because we're going to talk about him in our topic later in the show. I'm really hoping Luke Raley is more, I think he'll at least be strong side platoon as the left fielder. And that's where Roster Resource has him. That's what I was thinking before I pulled it up. I'm hoping at least that, maybe even a little more than just facing righties. But yeah, I think so. I think they're two of the three outfielders, along with Julio Rodriguez, most days in Seattle.
Yeah. And I mean, Caballero going to Tampa Bay seems like, you know, he's destined to be the short side of the platoon at most at this point, based on who else they have coming up and already in their infield. Would you like to retort that, or does that seem like pretty low hanging fruit?
No, I think so. Some guys were pointing out in the pitcher list Discord today that Taylor Walls has not been as good of a defender as his reputation may lead us to believe. So that may help his playing time a little more, but I'll have to see that first.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So Tampa Bay not done, as it looks like they are trading Andrew Kittredge to St. Louis. And in return, St. Louis should be sending Richie Palacios to the Rays. So my only question is the obvious question here. St. Louis is sending a younger outfielder away before they have a chance to really make a name for themselves. Should we be drafting him in the first round now? Just assuming that is what happens. As we've seen time and time again with these outfielders leaving St. Louis.
Maybe not first round fantasy drafts, but he's an all-star. That's for sure.
It's guaranteed, right? It's a lock. You might as well, you can find that prop bet. You might as well throw at least $5 on that.
Right. And he looked really good at times late in the season when we got to see him. Tampa, we know that they play matchups. We know that they also make trades like this and usually come out smelling like a rose. So yes, this does pique my interest in Richie Palacios.
Yeah, Kittredge joining the St. Louis bullpen, which, I mean, could be argued that it is in flux to an extent, but I think that they've already got some solid names in there that I don't foresee Kittredge, you know, taking a whole bulk of saves in that situation in St. Louis between Helsley and, you know, Gallegos and anybody else that they might have. JC Romero, who was, you know, made a name for himself at the end of last season as well. But still very, very solid pitcher, somebody who could force his way into that situation, I guess, with enough injuries and enough, you know, if they make those decisions. So a name to watch, but in my opinion, not somebody I'm drafting.
Yeah, we didn't see him much in 2023, but in 2022, he was somebody we talked about quite often on our Saturday night fab shows that we'll be coming back with in 2024, and good ratios, strikeouts, could go either way with snagging wins and saves when you're lucky. So I foresee we'll talk about him throughout this season as well, but agree, not somebody we're drafting.
All right. Let's see the next thing here on the list. We got a whole bunch to talk about, Kevin, but we're going to do that right after this break. All right. A couple small things that let's just do lightning round on some of these guys. Kevin, we got Harrison Bader. He signs a 1-year deal with the New York Mets. I mean, Bader obviously plays center field when healthy or when able. Do you see him playing every day, or you know, there's a couple other options that it seemed like the Mets had going into this?
Yeah, I think he is going to play every day as long as he stays healthy. We have no idea how long that will be. We talked about him earlier in the offseason, and it's all about health with Harrison Bader. We'd be happy to have him on our teams when healthy. It sure looks like for now he's going to go into 2024 healthy. That there's still a lot of risk with that. We know that. In my mind, he's right there with Byron Buxton in that regard. Hopefully, we see him on the field, but I knock him down a couple of rounds. Beyond what his projections tell us, even with the plate appearances, because you just don't know when you're going to miss those plate appearances. So unfortunately, he's not going to be somebody that ends up on many of my teams. But if he stays healthy, I think to answer your question once again, yeah, when healthy, he's a center fielder.
I mean, all the rumblings that you know you see around Twitter after this move is made was obviously revolving not around Bader but around their other trade acquisition earlier, as Tyrone Taylor, whether or not, you know, it seemed like this was an exciting opportunity for him to get more playing time with his new role with the Mets. I'm assuming that, you know, this is at least going to cut into it with Bader's signing.
Yeah, and that was my initial reaction, and I was at first a little disappointed for Tyrone Taylor, but I don't think this lasts very long. You have Brandon Nimmo, Starling Marte, and Harrison Bader as the starting outfielders in New York right now. We're going to see Tyrone Taylor by the second week in April.
Yeah, there we go. Lock it in. All right. Speaking of injured players signing new contracts with new teams, Frankie Montas, he signs a 1-year deal, obviously a make good deal, kind of prove it deal, with, of all places, not the best place to sign a let's see what I can do and put up the best numbers, the Cincinnati Reds. I don't know. This didn't make any sense to me from Frankie Montas's standpoint. Maybe it's just like, hey, they're offering me the most money. I don't care. I'll do what I can. But if you want to sign a 1-year deal to kind of show off what you can do so you can get that long-term contract, you don't do it in Cincinnati. You don't do it in Colorado. You don't even do it like, you know, in Fenway, or like, you just pick the best place for you. It doesn't even have to be a good team. So I don't know. I thought this was from that perspective, a surprising move on Montas's side of things. Now, from Cincinnati's side of things, happy for them. Especially since, you know, they're the closest team to me, and hopefully I'll be able to get to a game or two this season. It'll be fun to watch. But what are you expecting out of Montas in Cincinnati? And, you know, we talked about this, how the fact that he's healthy, like he pitched what, a 1 1/3 innings total at the very end of the 2023 season for the Yankees. He can't throw a baseball off the mound on a major league stadium. So he's got it all off season to get back into shape and make sure that he's ready to go. Cincinnati obviously is confident enough to give him some money to do so. It's still Cincinnati. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, obviously not the best spot to land for a pitcher for our fantasy purposes. You're correct. Happy for Cincinnati if he works out. I'm worried about innings. Steamer hasn't projected for 150 innings. He's done that once, and it was 3 years ago. He hasn't come close to that in his career other than in 2021. And he pitched in the Oakland Coliseum, complete 180 from Great American Small Park. It's more the innings I'm worried about than the ballpark. I think he'll be okay. I mean, we've seen a lot of pitchers have success over the years in Great American Small Park. Yes, it is a great hitter's park, but it's not Coors Field. It's not the massive outfield where everybody's BABIP goes up by 100 points and the ball can sail 600 feet. So it's not the worst spot, even though it's pretty close. I'm more concerned about the innings. I have Montas and held on to him in a couple of dynasty leagues. I hope he gives us innings. I'm not expecting more than about 120, and that's if he's healthy all year long. That's what I'm worried about. I know once you've thrown innings, and he's been healthy long enough, hopefully, and I'm sure he is. He's already building up, getting that arm strength back. But I do not see this 150 inning production that Steamer has him for.
Yeah, I mean, you hate to bring it up, but it's always in the back of my mind with Montas. Ever since he got, you know, pegged with the PEDs, he's never been the same health wise. And most people realize now that PEDs aren't usually used for performance enhancing. It's just bringing back the performance, being able to come back from injury, being able to come back from recovery time. Yeah, exactly. And so with, you know, maybe, you know, not being able to do that, you know, obviously has impacted him, at least, you know, from the way I'm looking at it. But I'm not a doctor, so I don't know much about that. Let's move on to what, you know, the thing we talked about the most before we started recording here. The White Sox are making moves. Every show we have a new White Sox signing. I'm assuming sooner or later we'll be able to talk about a trade that everybody's rumbling about with Dylan Cease on the move, possibly to New York or Baltimore or somewhere else. But for now, we get to talk about one of our boys, and that is Brett Phillips. Phillips 60. I really hope he gets jersey 66. I don't think they have that. Definitely not retired in Chicago, but it's hopefully it's not some kind of nuance that they can't give it to him if he asks for it. Anyway, Brett Phillips now signs a major league deal with the White Sox, presumably making him, I guess, maybe a starter. We'll see how that turns out. But what are the White Sox doing? Kevin, are you interested in anybody outside of Luis Robert Jr.? Maybe you're not even interested in him due to injury concerns, but I just drafted Andrew Vaughn and I felt a little dirty about it.
Yeah, exactly. I've looked at Andrew Vaughn a couple of times, haven't pulled the trigger yet. I am interested in the right spot. The injury history / rest of the lineup in Chicago has kept me away from Luis Robert. I am kind of interested in Eloy Jimenez. I haven't pulled this trigger yet, but the price is getting so low that he might be worth a shot. I just feel for Brett Phillips here. Hopefully this signing either has A, they promised him a starting role, or B, they just offered him more money than anybody else would give him. Maybe they offered him a role as a relief pitcher. I don't know, but I feel bad for him going to this spot. And I feel bad for our friend Mike Carter. This team is just a mess. Actually, maybe I feel good for Mike Carter because now he at least has Brett Phillips to root for this season.
There you go. There you go. I like that. Yeah, we'll see what ends up being his role with the White Sox, but I'll always be rooting for him. Mike, you too. Be rooting for you too, man. Sorry. All right, last two deals here, much smaller deal, even smaller than Brett Phillips. Arizona signs shortstop Kevin Newman and catcher Tucker Barnhart. Barnhart signed a minor league contract, presumably with an invite to spring training and all that. But Kevin Newman, shortstop for Arizona. Why?
Yeah, this is depth is all I can see here. I don't think he's going to play over Perdomo. I don't think he's going to play over Ketel Marte. I don't think he's going to play definitely over Jordan Lawler when they bring him up. So I think it's a depth move. Kevin Newman, pretty highly rated prospect a few years ago. Injuries, performance hasn't worked out. Yeah, I don't see anything changing with the Diamondbacks as far as fantasy is concerned.
Yeah, you made the joke about Phillips being a reliever for the White Sox. Barnhart, also one of those position players that likes to get into the game for the Cubs last year. He pitched at the game I went to at Wrigley last year, and it was amazing. I'm watching the radar gun on the screen, and I see it. I'm like, oh, okay. I think he threw like, 67, 68 or something like that. But then he threw something 37 miles per hour. And I don't know what it was. But the fact I'm like, hey, that's a pretty good range. If you can differentiate your pitches 30 miles in difference, you're gonna throw some guys. And he got a strikeout. So I was pretty impressed by it.
I love that because I was a catcher growing up. All the way till I graduated high school, and I had very few, very brief pitching appearances throughout my career. And for me, that 37 mile an hour would have been my knuckle curve.
Okay, there you go. That's probably what it was. All right, last thing here on the list, Colorado. They signed another pitcher, making us, care that much less about Dakota Hudson. But they also signed Jacob Stallings, another catcher signing here. Stallings obviously has played, a long career, but it's interesting to see them fill their catching. It was a vacancy, but, it seemed like if there was a hole that Colorado might have had, it might have been for catcher. Everybody's obviously clamoring for Gary Sanchez to sign there and see what he could do, but obviously that's probably not happening now. Does this make you more interested in Stallings at the catcher position, especially in a DC where you're probably drafting three or four guys?
At least Diaz is still under contract for Colorado. So that this probably hurts both him and Stallings. On the flip side, I really thought Stallings was going to be going back to Miami, and now I'm much more interested in Christian Betancourt, who I had already drafted as a second catcher in a league, and now I'm ecstatic about where I got him. So I'm more worried about the Colorado situation, but pretty excited about the Miami situation now.
Yeah, Miami situation, it seemed like it was a little bit more crowded than I would have liked it to have been at the catcher position, especially when they brought in Betancourt as well between Stallings possibly returning, and then Nick Fortes. Fortes being the guy that people were more excited about, myself included, going into last year, just not thinking personally that Fortes was going to get a whole lot of playing time with Stallings, basically being the defensive guy behind the plate. We'll see how that maps out between Betancourt and Fortes. Obviously, Fortes being the younger guy in Miami, kind of coming up as their, I don't know if I would necessarily tag him as the catcher of the future, or at least that's how they might have seen him. But it seemed like he was doing all the right things going into 2023, that he could have at least made a name for himself in that way. Betancourt only had like his own little spot in Boston where he did a bunch of stuff, but everywhere else he's been that backup guy.
Yeah, 660 plate appearances over the last two seasons for Stallings in Miami, now available. I don't think they're all going to Fortes. I'm pretty excited about this move for Betancourt.
All right, fair enough. All right, that locks it down. I was hoping to see something else kind of come through at the last second, but nope. Of course, it'll come through
in about an hour, Adam.
Yeah, as soon as I hit end recording on this button right here, we'll see something. But in the meantime, let's talk about the thing you've been alluding to. We're gonna talk a little bit about those all-around players that you're kind of trying to find later on in your drafts, the guys or talking hitters who can be five category contributors that you don't have to grab in the first 10 rounds, at least the ones that you think will make a name for themselves in 2024. We'll get to all that talk after this quick break. All right, we're back. You're still listening to On the Wire. Of course, I am Adam Howe, joined by Kevin Hastings, and we are going to get into the 2020 club. These are, I said before the break that we're going to talk about guys that are five category contributors. That's a little strong Because really what it comes down to is you're a five, like you can be an addition to your team, or a player can be an addition to your team in the average category, as long as you're not hitting below 230 at this point in Major League Baseball, really. You're not hurting anything. You're not helping. You're not a contributor, I guess. But as long as you're not, you know, Kyle Schwarber, Joey Gallo's, those guys are hurting you in that category. But as long as you can kind of stay above, you can tread water at 230, 240, and then you start helping your team right around the 260 mark at this point. But for the purposes of this conversation, Kevin, we're going to be talking about guys that either went 2020, or just to be a little bit more cheeky about it, we're going 2024 in 2024. So 19 hitters, let's just put this in perspective, 19 hitters last year in 2023 hit the 2020 mark. 17 players, hit the 2020 mark in 2023. Five of them are not projected to repeat in 2024. So let's go through some of those guys that are not projected by Steamer, to hit that 2020 mark again in 2024. That includes Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani, Luis Robert Jr., Cody Bellinger. Ohtani is projected. Scratch that. Lane Thomas and George Springer. These guys are not projected, but they did hit it in 2023. Couple guys in 2024 that stand out. There are 19 guys who are projected by Steamer to hit the 2020 mark, who did not do it in 2023. It's Michael Harris second. We got O'Neal Cruz, Christian Yelich, Zach Geloff, you mentioned earlier, and then Trevor Story, who I mentioned in passing earlier as well. So those guys, and Ellie De La Cruz and Jazz Chisholm Jr. rounded out as well. So those guys are all projected to hit 2020 in 2024, who did not hit the mark in 2023. So pretty equal list, right? There's 19 players projected in total for 2024 by Steamer to hit that mark. There's 17 hit them last year. So pretty evenly matched there as far as projections versus what we saw last year. Of course, we saw the stolen bases go up in general. Of this list, only five players on each list hit the 2024 mark, and that's what we're going with for the remainder of this. Is just be on point with our theme here. 2024. We've got the guys who are projected to go 2020. Like I said, five of them. Ten of them. Wow, I am on a roll, Kevin. I'm on a roll. I can't talk too this many long. Numbers. No more monologues for me. Ronald Acuña Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Tucker, Bobby Witt Jr., Corbin Carroll, Randy Arozarena, Trey Turner, Jazz Chisholm, and Ellie De La Cruz, all projected to hit the 2024 mark. All of these guys, every name I've listed so far, is being drafted in the top nine rounds in your standard 15 teamers in your DCs. So using ADP that I collected from Draft Champions between December 1st and January 4th, all these guys are going before the end of the ninth round, with Zach Geloff going at ADP 135, Anthony Volpe on both those lists actually, going at ADP 132. Those guys are going to round it out. So what I want to talk to you about is names that you see going in any draft, but we're going to use the same DC draft for looking at rounds and ADP after round nine, who you think could, even though they're not being projected for it, who you would be the most confident as who's going to hit that 2024 mark in 2024. And so it's pretty straightforward, really. It's like, look for the guys who are the guys that are gonna, be surprising. If they're gonna find their way into extra playing time, they're gonna have success on the base pass, so they're gonna be allowed to run a little bit more, whatever the case may be. We need some names and we need to draft them, because we don't want to necessarily be handcuffed in the first nine rounds to grab one of these other guys that at least Steamer thinks is going to be the guys that we want to be drafting for the more rounded players in our lineup. So I'm going to group this together rounds in about three round groupings. Because as obviously as we go long in your draft, so we're only going to go to round 30. We're looking at this as the Fab League style scenario. Rounds 10 through 12. Again, looking at that ADP board from Draft Champions between, it's nice because you can make a board, like an actual draft board instead of just looking down the list. So you can kind of see the rounds graphically there. Rounds 10 through 12, Kevin, what are the names that stand out for you?
Okay, there's several names here. And I did this a couple of ways. The first thing I did was I looked for some players in the Steamer 600. So based on close to a full season's plate appearances that got us close. And that was the first way I looked at it. I didn't look at the ADP. I looked for players I thought could be close and then went to where they were being drafted. And then after I had done that, I went back and went down the ADP list and went through every player in these groups of rounds and looked for players I thought could do this. So I looked at it from both directions. And this round of 10 to 12, as you would expect, far more possibilities than as we get later in drafts. But I'm really excited about Chaz McCormick for 2024. We're talking about a guy that was almost a four-win player in 115 games. And yes, defense goes into that, but it was mostly due to his offense. He had a 133 WRC plus. So I'm talking real baseball numbers here. A 114 WRC plus in 2022. For some reason, Dusty Baker didn't play Chaz McCormick full time, and he doesn't have these huge platoon splits, right? He should be an everyday player. Steamer is still only projecting him because all they have to go off of is what he's done in the past. I know projections include a lot of things that we don't think they might. And we talk about that all the time. Don't double count things. I don't think Steamer is accounting for the fact that Dusty Baker is no longer the manager of the Houston Astros. They haven't projected for 123 games. In those 123 games, they're projecting him for 18 home runs, 13 stolen bases. Both big drop-offs from what he did in 115 games in 2023. And Chaz McCormick, you stipulated, you had first said five tool or five category players and then kind of pulled back on that and said, well, maybe not all five categories for some of these guys. We're talking 259 career batting average mm-hmm. here and a 273 in 2023 for Chaz McCormick. I'm penciling Chaz McCormick in for at least 140 games. That's jumping everything up. Also, his success rate on stolen bases was high enough. I don't see this drop off in stolen base attempts that Steamer is projecting. In fact, I see more. I think Chaz McCormick is going to outperform, and he barely misses or barely missed it last year. He wouldn't even be somebody we could talk about if he'd gotten one more stolen base, mm-hmm. right? He had 19, but I think Chaz McCormick makes this fairly easily with a decent batting average. Sure, it probably comes down a bit from 273, but he's that 260 to 270 guy. He's going to score us 70 to 80 runs, 80 RBI, if everything, you know, in 140 games, I'm saying, not going by his projections. I think he is the five category guy going in this spot. And he's going in the 12th round. I didn't go to the top end of the range here. He's ADP 174. He has gone as early as 140. As late as 197, and there's a lot of other names here in this 10 to 12 round that I like, but I really like Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you throw out a name that I've seen in Jeff Zimmerman's Mining the News, I always got to reference that, but in one of his more recent ones in mid-December, Chaz McCormick's name popped up just with GM Dana Brown again saying that McCormick was an everyday guy, whether or not he's, you know, in center field or in another, in a corner spot, doesn't matter. It's nice to know that at least the GM has back in that realm, even if guys like Jake Meyer get more run at center field and kind of push him over to the corner. Michael Brantley just retired, so, you know, he's not coming back to Houston for whatever reason. So if McCormick gets that playing time, I like that. I like that name a lot. As you mentioned, there's a whole lot of names as possibility. A lot of these guys kind of going in and out as I was kind of like changing the parameters of this ADP with Wyatt Langford kind of moving around, Jackson Churio being this young guy that obviously has moved up and down in ADP based on his signing of his contract and all that. Evan Carter, like, so this is definitely that time period in the draft where you've got to, you know, you got to make your decisions as far as if you want to make a statement with these younger guys that if given the playing time, yeah, I understand why they're on your list as well. It's just a matter of whether or not you can trust the Steamer 600 or the standard Steamer, because you're not exactly sure what kind of playing time they're going to get from the get go. Cause of course we're talking about these, these stats that matter throughout the course of the season. If you take what they do from June on, you could say, oh, they extrapolate that to a 2024 season. Sure. But we need to know what they're going to be doing throughout the course of the entire season as well.
Yeah. The other guy I'm excited about here, and you named several of the guys, they all have many of them are rookies. So we don't know exactly the playing time. Evan Carter, Churio, Langford, you mentioned all of these guys are being drafted in this range. Other guys have playing time concerns, TJ Friedel in Cincinnati, right? All the Cincinnati Reds right now have playing time concerns, right? So we're worried about that, but I'm pretty excited about Outman in LA. In this spot, Steamer only has him projected for 9 stolen bases, but he was 16 out of 19 last season. And this is something that was talked about in Arizona, right? When the success rate is that high, then we're not attempting enough stolen bases. And now they're cutting another 2 seconds off the pitch clock when there's a runner on base. Mm-hmm. That just concentrates the time. The runners can time that even better. So I like Outman here with a good shot to break into this group. I'm not worried about the home runs at all.
No. I mean, it seems like there's a little bit more opportunity in the outfield as well for the Dodgers, especially if, you know, Mookie Betts is going to be playing every day at second base, as it's been alluded to as well by Dave Roberts, and to give him that kind of opportunity, whether it's a, you know, fourth outfielder or not, still being able to rotate in more often. And maybe he's not a pinch runner, so he's not going to get those kind of stolen bases. But you got to think about how many opportunities he's actually going to get, and very well be, you know, he's a starting center fielder playing pretty much every day for the Dodgers. So he should surpass the playing time that we saw him in 2023. And I mean, he still had 567 plate appearances last year. And so the fact that, you know, 567 plate appearances translated to 19 stolen base attempts, like you said, that success rate is, you know, should, if he can bring that up, you know, to over the 600 mark, at least be able to bring him over that 20 stolen base mark, if not hit that 2024 mark that we're looking for. All right, let's move on then, Kevin. That was rounds 10 through 12. Let's move a little bit further down. Again, we're doing this in 3-round grouping. So rounds 13 through 15, we're doing 15 rounders. So we're talking about your main events. We're talking about our 15 team listener leagues, main event qualifiers, any other 15 teamer that you're doing a fab draft in. That's what we're using as reference point. So for rounds, you can translate that on your own for 12 teamers, but all these guys are still going to be available in the general vicinity, especially in that ADP range as well. So rounds 13 to 15, Kevin, who's obviously the pool starts to dwindle as we move down in this fictional draft area. But who are you looking at?
Yeah. A few less players here that I feel have the possibility, a couple that I'm just going to gloss over Jonathan India. I think there's a chance. Once again, playing time in Cincinnati, and if he's one of the guys that we think Cincinnati has to trade somebody, wherever he ends up, we're not sure, but I think he has the skills to do it. Jeremy Pena would really have to up his stolen base attempts, but I think there's a shot there. I struggled between the other three guys I have in this range. Jared Kelnick might have just got more plate appearances. You know, we thought he might be strong side of the platoon in Atlanta with Vaughn Grissom facing lefties as the left fielder, but I don't see anybody else as that roster's constructed right now that they're probably going to let do that. So Jared Kelnick's plate appearances probably just went up a bit. I like that. I'm really excited about Lars Nubar. I know many were on him last year and we're hearing a little less about him this year. I think that's a buying opportunity. I think there's a big opportunity here. I like him just as much, if not more, because he performed in spite of the playing time not quite being consistent due to injuries and things. So I like Lars Nootbaar there, but I settled on the one guy going in the 14th round, 208 ADP, and it's a tight ADP. His min is 191, max 237. That's a pretty short range for this late in a draft. So this is about where you can count on getting him the 13th to 15th round here, and that's Dalton Varsho. He's going to move over to left field, it appears, with Kiermaier signing in Toronto. And surprisingly to me and maybe others, he's never got to this point, and it's the stolen bases that he's been short. The home runs haven't been the issue. So once again, with the new rules, another year of that under our belt, another 2 seconds off the clock, his success rate in the stolen bases, he should probably be taking more attempts. I think we'll probably see that. So I like Dalton Varsho here to go 2024.
Yeah, Varsho, just another one of those guys that you worry about. Well, not that you worry about, but you're like, you almost forget about because it's like, oh, all his value was in that catcher eligibility. And obviously losing that last season kind of knocks him down. But, he's still going to be able to put up what you're looking for, and on a regular basis. So you're obviously not drafting Varsho for in that catcher range that you used to. Doesn't mean he doesn't have the value at outfield, especially with the five in a five outfielder league. So, nice call out there. I think. Let's move on then to the next rounds of groupings. Next grouping of rounds, round 16 to 18, Kevin. We're looking at, the 230, 250 range of ADP and then some. What names kind of stood out for you there?
Yeah, this one, they're pretty slim. A lot of pitchers and a lot of catchers taken in this area of drafts. So we didn't have a lot of choices. Still some guys here, though, where it's possible. One of them completely health-related. And some question marks. The power's been down even when healthy the last couple of years, but that's Starlin Marte. I don't think he's staying healthy enough to do this, so I'm kind of glancing over that. But we know, due to his what he's done in his career, it is a possibility. We've talked a lot about Tyler O'Neill and the move to Boston, even when it wasn't official, and how much I like that move. Love Tyler O'Neill in the 16th round. He has gone as high as the 14th round, but late in the 14th, pick 207 is his min still. I think that will continue to get earlier and earlier throughout draft season, as long as we're not hearing anything along the injury front. That is the concern with Tyler O'Neill. And I'm kind of glossing over that, even though he was my guy, because I really think that some might be surprised at how close or how high the potential is for Jack Suwinski to reach these numbers. And it has a lot to do with his success that he's had in his stolen bases. I believe, yeah, he was only caught twice. He had 13 stolen bases, only caught twice. Once again, what we know with the new rules, success rate, always, we always heard it used to be 72, 73%. Some would even round it up to 75%. If you're a lot more successful than that, like Jack Suwinski is, you're not making enough stolen base attempts. You're actually costing your team runs over the course of a season. I think teams like the Pirates are starting to look at these numbers, and I think they'll turn him loose a little more often. Another guy we're not concerned about with the home runs here, Steamer only has him projected for 8 stolen bases. I don't see that for a guy that just went 13 for 15.
Yeah, I mean, you're mentioning it a lot, but I think that it's worth harping on is the fact that, hey, like if you're successful, your team should be taking advantage of that, especially in this new environment that we're seeing. You know, I guess I worry about Suwinski. Like, he's got to run a lot more to get to that 24 mark, right? If he's already running only, you know, 13 times, if he's going to be running basically doubling that in order to get to that 24 mark. It's just a matter of whether or not he's put into situations where he has the opportunity to do so. We all know, like, you can't run unless you have the opportunity to do so. And if his team is willing to take advantage of that. So I guess we're going to start seeing what teams are adjusting more so to these to the new environment that we've seen in 2023 right away. And we talk about this too in spring training. That's one of the things you can actually look at that actually is a little stickier than most things, is how the team is taking advantage of the base running opportunities, what they're actually doing on the base pass to prepare themselves for the regular season. In the teams that run or are more aggressive on the base pass in spring training, typically, at least into April, are also more aggressive in the regular season as well. So something to see how his team works that into his repertoire in March. All right, round 19 to 21 here, Kevin. Got some pretty, you know, obvious names as far as speed goes. It's just whether or not they're going to get enough playing time to hit the home runs, never mind the stolen bases. Talk to me about some of the more obvious names on this list.
Yeah, playing time, both due to injury and team context and a rookie or two here, right? So I'm just going to cruise through these names that all have a question mark, mainly due to playing time. Tavares in Texas. We got Evan Carter. We got Wyatt Langford coming. Adolis Garcia is out there. Tavares played well, especially in the second half, and has a nice shot. You pointed out to me earlier today, and I had seen it, and we talked about it off air, that Eric Cross put out a tweet of guys that were projected for 15-15. So getting as close to this mark, and Tavares is one of them in Texas. So I like that call out. He's close, even in projections, just didn't quite make the group that knocked guys out of this earlier. Byron Buxton, nothing else needs to be said, right? We know the concerns there. Tommy Pham, we've talked about him recently. Where does he end up? Is he a full-time player? Does he have to play his way in as he did last year? And he was awesome when he did. We've talked about that. Parker Meadows, young guy, Will Benson, and Fraley, both in Cincinnati, brought that up when we were talking about guys going 10 rounds earlier. So there's the concerns there. So I settled on Jose Siri here, going in the 19th round, and we know about the power. I think some might be surprised that he was as successful as he was in his stolen base attempts. And in Tampa, they gave him a pretty good run, almost every day basis. Not a lot of matchup playing with him. So, yep, the stolen bases do have to come up, but it's another guy that was successful. And if anybody is, and I think a lot of teams are, I think this offseason teams are, I'm going to quit saying it, they were too successful. I think they'll turn some guys loose a little more. So I see Jose Siri with the possibility of getting to this point.
Yeah, I mean, Siri's guy, as he's coming up as a prospect, who his speed was his calling card. Like, he's right. Not a power guy. The power kind of was surprising, at least to me.
As, he sold out, started pulling the ball.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing. He can do that. It doesn't affect the way he runs absolutely. At all. He might strike out a couple more times, but he's not going to affect how he runs. And so, yes, his output hasn't been what we would maybe have expected, as you know, stolen 13 bases last year, 12 stolen bases last year, 14 stolen bases in 2022. But still relatively, if not above average success rate, in both of those seasons. I would like to see him take advantage of that speed that he obviously has moving in, to 2024. I don't remember. I've done too many drafts already. And not as many as some other people. I get that. I'm not trying to like put myself in a certain situation, but more than I have done before the new year has crossed. And so I know I've got him somewhere. I just don't know in what context.
And Steamer 600 has him making it. They're only projecting him for 483 plate appearances, 122 games. I think we see him more than that. So he easily makes it if he gets into 140 games. Projection wise, not easily performs it, but his projection easily gets there if we see those added plate appearances.
Yeah. And obviously, with Luke Raley leaving the Rays, you know, maybe there's a little bit of less competition in that outfield, and Siri doesn't fall into more of a platoon situation, and he can kind of roam center field freely on a regular basis and at least volume his way up to where we need him to be. Rounds 22 to 24. Okay, we are getting post 300 here, Kevin. And generally speaking, what are we looking at for options as we get into the second third of a standard 30 round draft?
Yeah, there's still guys here, and in this range, still multiple guys, I think, with the opportunity. Question marks. Absolutely not definite. Speaking of Raley, Luke Raley, now in Seattle, he's a possibility. I like him. Chris Taylor, we know he has 2020 potential when given the playing time, and so that's a possibility. Pete Crow Armstrong is interesting. Once, like rookies earlier in the draft, we have to see him up and up early for him to reach this number. But I really like Alec Thomas here in Arizona. We've seen him up and down due to performance for the last couple of seasons. Finally, in 2023, we started seeing the Alec Thomas that we wanted to see and that Arizona wanted to see. They kept giving him opportunities. He finally took advantage. For the last third of the season on into the postseason, I think we see 600 plate appearances plus of Alec Thomas as a starting center fielder in Arizona. And if that's the case, at an ADP of 318, 22nd round in 15-team leagues, we could see Alec Thomas go 2024 in 2024.
I just love hearing the 2024 in 2024. Thank you for obliging.
Of course,
the silliness that is this theme here. I mean, Thomas is just all about, like, I mean, obviously this is, we say it with a lot of different players, especially prospects. I mean, he had the pedigree. He was the guy that you thought was going to be like that. You know, he's going to come up with Carroll and just be like the centerpieces of that outfield in Arizona, and just wasn't given the consistency, and especially in playing time, kind of moving him up and down as well, majors and minors. It seems like he's got a pretty clear runway going into 2024, in my opinion, in Arizona. So I know I've been grabbing him in a couple places as my fourth and or fifth outfielder, depending on the way I've built the team by that time in the draft. So fan as well. Love the call out there.
Yeah, one of the drawbacks of some of the guys that are so successful right away, like Corbin Carroll, like Bobby Witt Jr., is we give up on some of these other guys so quickly. I mean, Alec Thomas is still 23 years old, right? And he's got 813 plate appearances at the major league level under his belt. And he's finally starting to perform at the level we had hoped. But when we see these guys so young and they don't pan out right away, I think they're giving up on too early, especially in our fantasy leagues.
Yeah. I mean, it's how you can take advantage in your drafts, right? It's the risk, the reward way outperforms the risk at this point in a draft, right? Anytime
you've been drafting a lot of Jared Kelnick, right?
Same thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You gotta love the post hype sleepers, you know?
Yes. My favorite.
That's favorite term. Yeah. It's a great term. All right. It's getting a little thin, Kevin. We are getting to rounds 25 to 27 here. This, especially in your fab leagues, this is where you're starting to take all the risk. You're filling out your bench. How are you going to fill those last seven spots? And you're doing that by now. You're not filling in one of your starting spots by round 25. Who's out there though, that you can throw on your bench, hoping that they put it together really early? Cause you want to be able to make these decisions, right? We talk about this all the time. Nick Pollock talks about it all the time. You want to be able to make the decisions early about these types of players. That's why I like drafting these fab leagues early in the season, because I can take and be like, the only thing I care about is where this person signs, what role they're going to be given out of spring training. Not so much like, are they going to have to figure it out throughout April and into May? Am I not going to want to cut this guy? These are the type of players I want to be able to cut the first fab period, if not the second fab period. And I want to be able to do that with conviction. Who kind of fits that mold, and could, if they have a heart, they have a hot start, I'm not going to want to cut them because they can hit 2024.
Yep. At first, this is why I alluded to this earlier, when it came up with Starly Marte. At first, I had Tyrone Taylor in this spot. The Harrison Bader signing made me go, oh, I got to find another guy. And not only that, I cheated a little bit. He's actually going later than round 30. I thought that'd be okay at this spot, the last spot on the list. And as I said, I joked about second week in April, we will probably see a lot of Tyrone Taylor in 2024, maybe not early enough to reach these thresholds. But Edward Olivares, and this is exactly what you just brought up with what we'll be able to, if we're drafted now, you take him in the 29th, 30th round, 28th, we're late in your draft, and see if he's getting the everyday playing time with Pittsburgh. If he does, he has the potential to be a 2020, maybe even 2024 guy. That would be a huge jump in stolen bases above his projection. Although he did have 11 stolen bases in 2023, not a lot more than half of the playing time there. So we know he has the power. He's got the speed as well. If he's going to play every day for Pittsburgh, which I think there's a really good chance he is, that low strikeout rate, gotta love it, right? 18.7% strikeout rate for his career, for a guy with the little bit of power that he does have, and then the speed as well. He's still 27 years old. He will be 28 by the time the season starts, but he's got some years left in him. I mean, he spent half his career on the bus back and forth between Kansas City and Omaha, right? So I like Edward Olivares to have a really nice year. This might be pushing it a little bit, but we're talking last three rounds of a 15-team, 30-round draft, and we're still finding guys that have a potential to at least get close to a 2020 or 2024 season. So Edward Olivares, he could get close.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, it's at this point in the draft, like you said, it's like these are still players that have a chance. It really doesn't revolve around talent. It just revolves around what opportunity their teams are going to give them. And whether they're going to give them a green light to run, whether or not they're going to give them enough plate appearances to volume their way to that spot. Because I mean, I think we all see it. If Olivares gets those 600 plus plate appearances, you know, he can do it. It's just a matter of whether or not Pittsburgh's going to, and you're going to see that in spring training. It's a little less clear than on the pitching side, like what we see from hitters in spring training, because you know, you have to really, you know, rely on guys like McCurlin and guys who are looking at their lineups and stuff like that and kind of analyzing that. But it's a very short sample, right? And these are games that don't matter. They're just trying to, you know, iron out different things. They're trying to work on swings, they're trying to work on whatever it is. But you still can see, like, who are they putting at the top of the lineup? Who do they want to get as many at-bats as possible? Who are they not pulling after the first, you know, wave, after the first string of players that they pull off? And how much look do they actually want to give certain players? And if Olivares is that guy, then it's a good sign, right? It's a good sign that the Pirates traded, you know, brought him in, and if they want to give him more playing time in spring training, they obviously want to get as much of a look as possible in game scenarios. And that bodes well, if that happens, that bodes well for the role he will have in April.
Right. I think the Pirates have reached the point where they want to win baseball games. They may not be planning on making the postseason in 2024, but what we've seen, and as a Royals fan, I know this perfectly, the way that the draft lottery works now in Major League Baseball, tanking isn't, in fact, it's almost not worth it at all. The Royals have had the second and third worst records the last two seasons. They're picking sixth and eighth, right? Go win your baseball games if you can. And you're doing that, you're still developing your young players, but you're playing the ones that you're trying to win baseball games at the same time.
The fact that you had to say a team has reached a point where they're trying to win baseball games is not a happy statement.
At least we're there.
Yeah, I guess. We've already talked about one team that we are pretty certain is not at that point any further. Sorry, Mike Carter. But we will save that for another time. All right. Well, that gets us through round 30. Some really interesting names. You might have already been on your watch list. You might have been looking at them. But just think about the fact that, hey, you know what? Like, especially in the bottom third of your drafts, you've got some options of guys who could, you know, step it up if given that opportunity. So some more names that you consider as you are getting knee deep in your draft season. But that, I think that's about it, Kevin. What do we got for us to kind of tie it all together as we enter January, as we enter 2024, and we continue to get that much closer to actual baseball?
We are closer than you might realize. So be careful. I know we have a lot of fantasy football players out there. Some wait till after that. Some that have even been doing fantasy baseball prep and doing some drafts even, but not really diving in. And we don't do our important drafts till March. I did my air quotes that nobody could see. We're almost there. It's close. Time's ticking away. So don't wait too much longer to start putting your spreadsheets together, putting your rankings together, uploading your things onto the different sites. So you're not looking at default draft rankings. That's a big one, in my opinion. That is such a huge advantage when you're drafting, is having your rankings uploaded for them, whether you do your own projections, whether they're someone else's. That Tanner Bell has the greatest thing on the planet as far as this is concerned. Go check out his little spreadsheet, and he has a little video that shows you how to do it. You can upload your thing onto your different draft platforms, so you have your rankings are what is in your draft room. That helps so much, but time is running out quicker than we might think. We're 2 months away, less than 2 months away from the so-called March drafts. So don't wait too much longer.
I mean, if a draft happens in March, it's a March draft. I mean, that's just how that works. Yeah. Nomenclature. Yeah,
exactly.
Something else that we're getting a lot closer to that I don't think is being talked about enough is PitchCon, January 24th to the 27th. Actually, I think it might be going an extra day or two. So look for an official announcement for at pitcher list in the coming days, I'm sure. But that's always a blast, obviously raising money for ALS as well. And so we will look forward to that as well. It's always a good time. Obviously, it was an event that was kind of created during, you know, the height of the pandemic and as almost like a lost season. But there's no reason that it shouldn't have continued past that. And it has every year since. So this should be the biggest one yet. So look forward to more announcements on that in the coming days and weeks. All right. But that is going to do it, Kevin, for us at episode 145 of On the Wire. You could follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hasting Kevin. Of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. After all that, I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.